You're listening to On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Welcome back to a new episode of On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library System. I'm Abby, here with my co-host EJ.
That's right, I'm EJ. In today's episode, we're sharing how to grow, learn, and connect at all nine branches of JMRL. We're also sharing our book chats. If you're a new listener, book chats are brief introductions to books we've been reading. Finally, because it's April, National Poetry Month, we're going to take a deep dive into two special poems.
Without further ado, here's how you can grow, learn, and connect these next 2 weeks at JMRL.
All are welcome to visit the Bookmobile. Monday through Thursday, the Bookmobile has scheduled stops in Albemarle County. Afternoons and evenings, the Bookmobile visits its scheduled stops in Charlottesville.
At Central, be sure to stop by the Children's Department for a STEAM Power Hour. STEAM is Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. That is every Wednesday from 4 to 5.
At Crozet, check out the Game Nights for Grown-Ups Wednesday, April 19th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m.
At Gordon, you can enjoy a drop-in story time every Thursday. No need to register. But please be aware that the branch will be closed for staff training this upcoming Thursday, April 13th.
At Green, we have another opportunity to enjoy STEAM. This project is for older kids and teens ages 9 through 13. It's on Thursday, April 20th from 3:30 to 4:30.
At Louisa, job seekers of all ages and levels of experience are invited to our Career Cafe Job Fair, Thursday, April 13th from 3 to 6 p.m.
At Nelson, teens can celebrate Poetry Month by creating blackout poetry on Thursday, April 13th from 2 to 3 p.m.
At Northside, attend the Peace of Mind Through Meditation program, which will be Tuesday, April 18th from 6:30 to 7:30.
At Scottsville, they will be planting flowers in their fairy garden on Friday, April 21st from 10 to 11. Don't miss out on the fun!
As always, check the calendar for more information and to register.
And now, on to book chat. So what are you talking about today, Abby?
For my book chat today, I read It's Not All Downhill From Here by Terry McMillan. This is a 2020 novel and really fun to read because when I asked my mom if she had ever read anything by Terry McMillan, she said, of course. So it was neat to read something contemporary, but from a really seasoned author who has been writing for decades. In hindsight, I should have read Waiting to Exhale or How Stella Got Her Groove Back. Those are a few of McMillan's really well-known works, and they also would have fulfilled my decades challenge of trying to read one book per decade. But oh well, maybe next time. I found this book by browsing the audiobooks that are currently available on Libby. That's how I find most of my books. I love to browse. When I have a particular book in mind, it almost never works out. It's not currently available. I have to put it on hold, etc., etc. So I love to just browse Libby. Now, this was a really fun read. It was about an older woman, Laretha Curry. She's in her late 60s, and this is a demographic that I don't read a lot about, so that was another way that just made it fun and different, interesting. She lives in Southern California, and really, she's just rocking her life. She has a successful business, she has friends, a great husband, but it's not all picture perfect. And then, of course, the world actually splits open out from under her. Now, not literally. Despite the location, you might think literally, but not literally, just figuratively, the way that the world tends to split open in fiction to create tension and conflict. So Laretha is scrambling. But what I love about this book is that she never really fully falls into that deep pit of despair or depression that we sometimes see our characters fall into. The arc of this book is not just one long drop and then the loud thud and then a long time spent pawing around looking to climb back up out of the pit. She's more scrappy, witty, sassy, and full of opinions. So it's very much small ups and downs and zigs and zags. And there's obviously that one big moment, but so much of the book are these little moments. Really, so much of this book is Laretha just encountering the latest minor bump in the road. Maybe her granddaughter, who's pregnant with twins, decides to name them Pretty and Handsome, which are not real names in her mind. She's calling up the doctor's office again and having to deal with the secretary. Or she's walking in on an illicit love affair within her circle, maybe family or friends. And it feels like throughout this, she's just shaking her head, rolling her eyes, and then taking it in stride. She might leave a snappy comment or two in her wake. Now, of course, there's grief and loss and disappointment, and there's aging in this book. But you pick it up if you want something funny and warm and very experiential, because Laretha is such an open book, and you really know her mind and her thoughts. There were moments that I hurt for her, and moments that I was sad for her, and also moments that I wanted to be her coach and her cheerleader. It really went beyond rooting for her, because there were moments when I was almost angry with her because I cared about her so much and I hated to see her not taking care of herself. You know what I mean? Like, she was a real person to me. So in the end, all of the messy and dynamic relationships round out beautifully, and Laretha continues to be an amazing, very well-drawn, real character. While this is my first Terry McMillan book, I think it holds true to what she has been dedicated to her entire career, which is writing authentically about the lives of Black women in America. So pick this up for something that just feels authentic and real, but light and warm in so many ways.
So for this episode's book chat, I am going to be talking about Counterfeit by Kirsten Chen. A tagline for this book from the publisher's website is, "Money can't buy happiness, but it can buy a decent fake." And that's pretty much what this book is about. So just a quick synopsis here. The story centers on Ava Wong, who is a very straight-laced, rule-following Chinese-American lawyer. Her husband, Ollie, is a successful transplant surgeon who leaves Ava at home with their two-year-old son quite a bit. As we all know, being a doctor is very time-consuming and can oftentimes be strenuous on a relationship, and their relationship is no different. So on the surface, everything seems good. Ava and Ollie have a great house, a son who she loves, but underneath the facade, the foundation is definitely crumbling. She hasn't used her law degree in years, and her son Henry's temper tantrums are really getting the best of her. Her marriage is failing because they have no time together, no real communication, based on how busy Ollie has become. He just got a new, you know, promotion, and so he's like the head of surgery. So there's just a lot that Ava's dealing with at this time. And so a chance encounter with her old college roommate changed her life forever. Winnie Fang abruptly dropped out of college without a word, and rumors started to fly that she had falsified her standardized test scores. So she dropped out of school and moved away, and Ava didn't hear from her for 10 years. So 10 years later, Winnie and Ava reconnect, and Winnie thrusts Ava into her world of luxury handbags and counterfeits. Ava, at this point in her life, is in deep need of a friend, as her perfect life isn't what it seems. And Winnie has the ability to not only see right through Ava's facade, but wants to help, and frames her offer to Ava as help. And so Ava joins up with Winnie, and they start a new friendship again, and a job, a new life for Ava. And Ava's at first pretty much on board with this, but everything starts to take a turn. So I don't want to say too much about the plot. That was a lot of details. And so for my impression of it, I would say it's really a quick read. It's definitely like women's literature, definitely about friendship and relationships and things like that. But it's pretty fast paced. It has some flaws. There's some stereotyping throughout the story, which in my opinion took away from the overall story. But the writing did also touch on some important relevant topics such as child labor and worker welfare and the general vices that can come with our overall obsession with consumerism. If you peruse the reviews of this book on Goodreads or Storygraph or wherever you get your reviews, you might notice that people were pretty much split on either loving this or absolutely hating this. So it was hard to kind of find a middle ground. For me, it was just okay. There were pieces of it that I enjoyed, but I did get lost in the structure. So the structure of the book was kind of interesting. This probably does fit into my New Year's reading resolutions as a book with a different type of writing style and storytelling style, because the first half is a conversation between Ava and a detective who never says anything. So there's no real context at the beginning about why she's speaking to detective, but she'll say things like, blah, 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 Winnie and I went to this place and blah, 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 detective. Doesn't that seem strange? Or blah, 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 detective, do you have kids? Blah, blah, blah. You know, so stuff like that. Things where you know there's a detective, but they're not saying anything and it's just kind of known that they're there. So because she's speaking to detective, the reader, or in my case, the listener, can surmise that Ava and Winnie probably got caught doing it, whatever it is they were doing, or that Ava had turned on Winnie at some point, potentially. I don't know. There's a lot of mystery there at the beginning. You don't know what's going on. It provided some unreliable narration throughout the book because there was mystery behind it. And so this book is sort of has an underlying mystery because you don't know why she's speaking to a detective. But it also touches on characters who really only have their best interest at heart sometimes, even though they might feign love and caring for another character, it might be for their own eventual gain. I think that's evident throughout the whole book. So, you know, it's a quick read. I had questions about the writing style, but overall, it was an interesting story structure and a topic that I think should be talked about. I know other writers have talked about this, like the counterfeit bag industry, especially the relationship between, you know, China and the U.S. and then Italy, who produce a lot of designer bags. It's not an industry that I'm very well versed in, so I learned a lot about the industry. And I know that Kirsten Chen, the author, did a lot of research to write this book. She went to China. She went to Hong Kong. She went to different manufacturers. She spoke with an intellectual property lawyer to get information on how that kind of stuff would actually work. So I think there's something to be learned from this. And if you're into a quick read, then I might recommend it for you. But if you are looking for something similar, but a bit more moving and substantial, I would definitely recommend The Violin Conspiracy by Brendan Slocum. And that's all for me.
For our final segment of the day, we're excited to share a poetry deep dive with you. We'll also have even more fun with poetry on our next episode on April 21st. Stay tuned. Now, on to the poetry.
Okay, so for my poetry deep dive, I chose a poem by Josephine Miles called Cage. And before I get into my short deep dive, I would like to read it to you. Here is Cage by Josephine Miles. Through the branches of the Japanese cherry, blooming like a cloud which would rain, a rain white as the sun, the living room across the roadway cuts its square of light, and in it fight. Two figures hot, irate, stuck between sink and sofa in that golden cage. Come out into the night, walk in the night. It is for you, not me. The cherry flowers will rain their rain as white, cool as the moon. Listen how they surround. You swing among them in your cage of light. Come out into the night. She wrote this in 1983, and it's from the collection of poems called Josephine Miles Collected Poems 1930 to 1983. And the first time I read this poem, I was really struck by how it made me feel a tiny bit irate. And even then, it made me want to know what was going on. And so I went ahead and kind of, you know, dissected it a little bit, sort of like line by line. So the first half of the poem, you know, it really invokes thoughts of nature. And as someone who has always admired nature and the outdoors and how one's senses can be completely enhanced when you're moved outside, it really changes how you feel sometimes, because there is an intense comfort that comes from the indoors to a lot of people. But being outdoors and talking about what you see there and how that makes you feel, that can be deeply moving in a lot of ways. So the poem starts off quite expansive, you know, through the branches of the Japanese cherry, blooming like a cloud which would rain, a rain white as the sun, the living room across the roadway. It's with that fourth line, the living room across the roadway, where the reader or the listener of the poem starts to see that it's not really about outdoors or how expansive the outside is, but how unexpansive being indoors is. And in this case, a square of light and in it fight. Those lines kind of zeroing in on the framing of two figures who are hot, irate, in the middle of a fight. So it's not a long poem, but they're saying a lot with these very descriptive words. There's a lot of contrast that's evidenced between the poems. You know, there's these stark differences between indoors and outdoors, the sun and the moon at the end of the poem, being caged and being out in the open. It's really trying to make you think about what's going on between these two figures who are hot, irate, stuck between sink and sofa in that golden cage. So I interpreted that golden cage as, you know, someone looking into a window and seeing people with the reflections of light that you can see, you know, sometimes when you're looking through windows or anything like that, you can see those reflections. But also as someone who might be inside of this house as one of the two figures having this fight in this cage, stuck between sink and sofa in that golden cage. That cage, it could be, you know, the panes on a window, which can sometimes create a cage-like view. It could mean a variety of things. But really what it's describing is being in a cage and not knowing or not wanting to or not seeing that you can go out into the night, walk the night, and see the calmness that can be around you as you are walking outside at night. So for me, there are definitely some subtle things happening that are tying the figures together, but then also kind of forcing them apart. One person is saying, come out into the night, walk in the night. It is for you, not me. So that really puts the action on you, you know, not me as the person saying that, but on you. The onus is on you. But you can enjoy this time. You have the onus. You have the ability to leave the cage and come out into the night, leaving your cage of light. So there's a lot being said. And of course, I am very much a novice at dissecting poems. And this analysis is done with help from the Poetry Foundation website, but also just me interpreting lines the way I see them written and how I think about them when I say the poem or when I read the poem. And that's what I do enjoy about poetry, is that it has the ability to have lots of different meanings for different people. You know, this feeling of the cherry blossoms and how beautiful and expansive outdoors are, and then cutting into this very small square of light and in it a fight. It's drastic. You know, it makes the reader think drastic things. There's also a lot of harsh T sounds, you know, light, fight, night, white, light, night. There's just a lot of it t, t, t sounds that really they escalate in tension, and it shows how in just a short poem tension can be built by language. And I think it shows how powerful words are. I had never read anything else by Josephine Miles before. I was looking for a new poem that I had never read before by a new poet that I had never heard of or read before for this deep dive. And I'm definitely going to read more of Josephine Miles to see if a lot of their poems have this contrast between them, have this kind of lyrical sense. You know, this could easily be, I'm rereading it now again just to see if it would make sense in my head. Yeah, rereading this, it could easily be lyrics to a song. You know, come out into the night, walk into the night, it's not you, not me. You know, there's lots of ways to make this. The cherry flowers will rain their rain as white, cool as the moon. Listen as they surround. You know, listen as they surround. That's such an interesting way to phrase kind of nothingness, but also expansiveness all at once. What surrounds you can be quiet, it can be still, but it can also be expansive and huge. But these two people are caged. They're caged and they want to get out, but they're stuck, you know, between the sink and the sofa. They want to get out into the night. One is saying to the other, it is for you, not for me. And they both could be saying the same to each other, which I also think is very interesting. So, powerful words here for a poem that says a lot in not many lines at all. So that was my very, very short and quick deep dive into the Josephine Miles poem, Cage.
Now my poem is It's Nice to Think of Tears by Gerald Stern. This is found in his collection Paradise Poems, which can be found in the JMRL collection. I chose this because I was really interested in exploring Gerald Stern a little after spending all of last month, March, with Ross Gay. Now, Roske studied under Gerald Stern when he was at Sarah Lawrence College, earning his MFA. Gerald Stern also just died this last fall, and I just heard Roske talk about Gerald Stern a fair amount through the different programming opportunities that we had here through the library and our Same Page festivities, so I wanted to check him out. Now, if you missed our Roske programming last month, we will put the link to the show notes so that you can enjoy that episode as well. But let me start this deep dive into Gerald Stern with a little bit more about Roske, because Roske was very much influenced by Gerald Stern. And I will admit that while I've now read a little bit of Gerald Stern, I've read much more of Roske. But I think that they are read-alikes, so I'm excited to read more of Gerald Stern, knowing that he influenced Roske so much. So Roske has said, "Almost everything that interests me is in the small moments, the very precise and nearly invisible moments that, upon meditation, have to do with everything. His poems look for the light in bruises, racism, and addiction." I chose that quote from Roske because that's why I love him so much. He picks something small, maybe seemingly random, but it has to do with everything. All of the big questions of our lives can be considered when looking at something small, like bare feet or red buds or a cup of coffee. So on to Gerald Stern. He has been called an American original. He's sometimes comic, sometimes tragic, and his friend Stanley Kunitz referred to him as the wilderness in American poetry. Stern's work is known for its passionate defense of human emotions and needs. And Toy Derricott has said, "Gerald Stern has made an immense contribution to American poetry. His poems are not only great poems, memorable ones, but ones that get into your heart and stay there. Their lyrical ecstasies take you up for that moment, so that your vision is changed, you are changed. The voice is intimate, someone unafraid to be imperfect. Gerald Stern's poems sing in praise of the natural world and in outrage of whatever is anti-human." I love that. Knowing that his poetry changes you, I'm so interested in the concept of change. Thanks really in part to Roske, who has shed such a light on how fascinating it is that we change as humans. So without further ado, I'm going to read the poem, and then I'm going to analyze the poem. And this is just strictly my own thoughts, my own analysis or interpretation. This is "It's Nice to Think of Tears" by Gerald Stern. "It's nice to think of tears as pollywogs rolling down your face, lost on the cheekbones and the distant chin, before they drop on the oilcloth and the pine floor. It's nice to think of you reaching your hand up and wiping them away, all that sadness welling up, then disappearing. It's just fantastic to think of sorrow as water, to think of it dripping through the leaves or escaping in the sand, to see it stretching from one salt island to another or filling the cellar up, and the pools and ditches, all that grief where the eyes were, all that sobbing where the heart was, all those rivers flowing where the swelling had been, and all those lakes and oceans where the head was lying, where the mouth was open, where the shoulders were bent, where the hands were hanging down, where the dark old hands were helpless and hanging down." And this is my analysis of that poem, my deep dive, so to speak. Well, I thought it was immediately arresting that the first line contains that word pollywogs, which is a tadpole, but using the word which means to wiggle. Pollywog comes from an etymology meaning to wiggle. So immediately we start thinking of something joyful, maybe even silly, because doesn't pollywog sound a little silly? So you wonder how it's going to be tears and pollywogs, like sadness and silliness. Then we come to the second stanza, which is one contained sentence. It ends with that phrase, "welling up, then disappearing," period. It's, to me, a conventional, bodily-oriented look at sadness. Because it's nice when our sadness goes away. It's nice to think of reaching our hands up and pushing that sadness away. Especially when we can wipe our own tears. There's something to me that conveys strength, that we are able to be the ones to wipe our own tears away. But then that poem shifts after the second stanza, in my mind, because the rest of the poem is one long sentence. There are no more periods until the very end. So it's gathering and accumulating. And something interesting happens. The poem shifts, and now it's fantastic to think of sorrow as water. So he introduces water, which, of course, water as a symbol, its purity, its cleanliness, refreshing. Water is a clean slate. So I pause there and I ask, can sorrow be these things? Can sorrow be purity and cleanliness? Can sorrow be refreshing? So I said, okay, let's find out. Moving beyond the third stanza into the fourth stanza. Sorrow is now stretching in that fourth stanza, stretching from one salt island to another. It's now filling up the cellar and pools and ditches until we actually completely lose the body in the fifth stanza. It says, all that grief where the eyes were, all that sobbing where the heart was. We are no longer able to wipe the tears because our entire body has been consumed by tears. Note the verb tense were and was. The eyes were, the heart was. They are no longer there. And now, in the sixth stanza, the tears and the sorrow, that's been expanded into rivers, lakes, oceans. We're continuing to flow where these body parts had been. In that final stanza, mouth, shoulder, hands. And in the final stanza, of course, the last two lines, we read, where the dark old hands were helpless and hanging down. So it's a reversal from the hand in the second stanza, which was so casually and maybe strong, wiping away the tear. I think why I love this and where I can connect to the niceness and the fantastic that Stern uses, he uses that word choice. It's nice. It's just fantastic. I can connect to that nature of that image because for me, when sorrow is allowed to be big and all-consuming, Stern is saying it's nice to be able to be strong and wipe away your tear, but he's also saying it's nice to be able to disappear into sorrow. And I feel that. That is so true. At times, isn't it nice to just let yourself cry, to fully empty out, to not care what anyone else might think? And that's fantastic. That's where we move beyond nice. And now it's fantastic when we are allowed to spread and to just let it be all consuming. Now, the other characteristic that Stern is employing here is the sorrow as water. And I connect to that being full of movement. Now, that too, to me, is so beautiful because water moves. And it's really nice to think that our sorrow moves, that it flows and it's not stagnant. Like, it might overpower us, it might be everywhere, but it's moving. He also writes, it's just fantastic to think of sorrow as water. And I think this is an interesting thought in another way, because we can just think, wow, tears are just water. You know, the word tear is emotive. It means sad. But water has no emotion. In a way, on the flip side, helpful to realize that sometimes our tears, like if we just think, this is just water flowing from my eyes and I can get through this, I can continue on after these tears because in the end they are just water, like a river. It's a way to say, it's okay, I can get through this. On the flip side, water, let's remember that water is the most important thing on this earth. Water is priceless. So to compare tears to water is also to say that they are the most important thing in the world. That's the end of my deep dive. I really enjoyed breaking this poem down and spending a little time with it. I would encourage you to do the same thing. And it doesn't have to be scary or even a lot of work. You don't have to read the entire book of poetry before you choose a poem. You can flip through the book of poetry, find one that strikes you, maybe visually, because a lot of poetry is how the lines work, how the shape works. Find one that strikes you, read it. And if you want to spend a little time with it, spend a little time. That's what I did. I sat down, flipped through the book, found a poem, and I just spent a little time with it. So that's my encouragement to all of our listeners today and this entire month for poetry is take a little time to spend a little time with a poem.
Thank you, listeners, for being part of this podcast community. We're so happy to have you. We hope you'll join us in taking a moment to thank the Friends of the Library who generously support this endeavor. If you'd like to learn more or join the Friends, you can head to their website at jmrlfriends.org. Don't forget, the Friends of the Library book sale is going on now until April 9th.
That's all for us today. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. Don't forget, you can get involved on social media or by emailing us at podcast@jmrl.org. Thanks for tuning in. We're glad to be
on the same page.